Oh.
Ugh, that's really horrible. I don't want to see that.
Hello, and welcome to episode 30.
We're back!
Back once again with the renegade. No, I don't know. That was a bit of a jaunty version of that song. Hello.
We're back once again with the renegade master. Deep blood damage and the power to the people. Scatman!
There we go. That's enough for episode 30 of the... welcome to episode 30. Blue Party Poppers. Bang! Ticker tape parade.
Of the conversation.
Of the conversation. Yeah. Thank you. My name is Alan Poulter.
I'm Tom Hutchison.
30.
Yeah.
30.
Starting to feel old.
Yeah. It's dragging on a little.
Oh, we're out of the 20s now.
Yeah.
And the bones are creaking a little bit more.
Yeah, we're going to have to get a mortgage for the podcast.
Yeah, and oh, here come the kids. Yeah, and all the
little baby podcasts.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you feel? How do you feel being 30?
Good.
Is it like really being 30?
No.
No.
No. It's
slightly less hair.
Depends where you look. Yeah, so that's thank you for listening for all 30 episodes. I'm sure you have. I'm sure you have the full transcripts.
You, that one listener.
Tattooed,
thank you very much.
Tattooed on your body. You're probably down to the ankles now, but that's where you start at the top and work your way down again.
Absolutely. That's what Cheryl Cole did.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That looks like a rose, but in fact, if you look really closely, it's just a transcript of me and Tom. I'm the left buttock. Tom is the right buttock.
Brilliant. Yeah. I'm a buttock. Before we get into the genius that is this podcast, what is your opinion of Cheryl Cole's arse tattoo?
It's all right. I don't really like tattoos in the best of times.
Is it a bit overkill?
It's big. It's big, but I mean, she's a bit cheap. So I just think that it's, you know, I don't like tattoos anyway. So it's just kind of, it's just like, why do it?
It's ruined it.
It's on the thing is that the arse slash lower back sort of area. It's very rare unless you're in Girls Aloud that you've got your anus out. So like the thing I don't like is like tattoos on the arms of girls and things like that. It sort of ruins it.
Hate all tattoos. I think
I do as well.
I hate tattoos. But I mean the whole lot. When do you think this is a good idea? I'm going to get my whole ass tattooed.
Yeah.
Even if you're a big tattoo fan, really,
what do you get from it? You can't.
What do you get? You can't see it. Anyone who does see it is either going to be hopefully a very close lover, or what are you in a park showing off to people? Hey, check this out!
I think eventually, Tom, she will be in a park showing her ass.
Excuse me, ma'am. Could you put your ass away, please? This is the police.
This is a library. You do not get your ass out in a library. I don't know. It's. I'm sure
it's not a good look.
Yeah, but I don't expect you to see it too much. And if you do, high five.
We've all seen it. It's been on the interwebs.
That is true. That is true. I have seen it.
Yeah.
But I mean, I wouldn't see it in the normal course of my day-to-day business. I wouldn't like be getting into a lift and she go, hey, have you seen me ass, man?
Why, hey, man, look at this. Check this ass.
me auntie and uncle make a lovely couple of ladies.
Every night, man. Cheryl, every fucking night I try and go home and you're in my way in the bloody lift trying to show me your ass.
Yeah, it happens a lot.
Yeah. She would walk a mountain for a packet of Tudor.
Yeah, I'd walk a mountain for a packet of Tudor. Yeah.
What was that?
Spooky!
From Scandinavia.
That's everything, Geordie, I could possibly try to do.
Yeah.
Yes.
What, Jeff, man? What are you doing, pet?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my eyes, spooky!
Spunky.
Oh, no, Spuggy. When it's Spuggy from Baker Gwarf.
I thought it was Anthony.
It was the one who went, at the end of the episode, right? That was her. That was Spuggy.
I like the way you sort of did it. You lowered your voice and you moved further away from the microphone.
Yeah, I'll try to give you the authentic echo sound.
Yeah. I'll do it in post. It's fine.
Let's do that in post.
Yeah, we'll catch that.
Yeah.
So yeah, episode 30.
Right, let's start. Let's start this fucking machine.
We're not just going to talk about arse. okay. So what I think we wanted to talk about, recently it got to the end of the football transfer window.
Yes.
Where the record breaking amount of
around £630 million was spent.
It's a lot of money
in the Premier League alone.
Yeah,
that was double the next nearest. I think. Forgive me if I'm wrong here. The Spanish market.
Yeah,
around 300 million, and a third of that was Gareth Bale.
Yeah, I mean that's more than I earned in a month.
Really? Not what I've heard.
Yeah, yeah. It's a phenomenal, mind blowing amount of money.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
And I heard on the Sky Sports News. I mean, I should point out that if you probably guessed this by 30 fucking episodes, of this thing, that we're not big sports guys. I mean, I love F1. F1's my thing.
Go yeah. sports.
Go sports, guys. But you know, for this sort of like commercial aspect of the sports machine, I think it's good to talk about this. Mm. That large amount of money, as far as football's concerned, I think it's because there's a lot of new television money coming in.
Yes, there's a whole new TV rights deal coming in.
People have got a bit of money to splash around. They know that they're going to have income for the foreseeable future from that as well.
It's going up a huge amount, actually, for all teams involved, particularly in the Premier League, not so much in the rest of them. What's changed for me in recent years, and very recent years, is the whole transfer deadline day thing. Mm. It never used to be a thing for me. People would just slowly buy players over the summer, right?
Yeah.
And transfer deadline day come and went, and nothing really happened. Is my kind of generic memory of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But now it's become this beast, which is almost more exciting than some of the bloody football matches.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I was sitting there, and I never do this. Like you just said, I'm an Arsenal fan, and I've been to I try and go once or twice a year if I can afford to, because the bloody prices will come into in a bit. But I wouldn't say I'm a diehard, I have to watch a football match every week or I'm going to, implode kind of guy. But I was sitting there on the transfer deadline night, which was Monday night, in front of Sky Sports News for about 3 hours, right? Waiting to see invested interested with the Arsenal team in particular, because we never buy anyone, and they finally bought this player for the second highest amount ever spent in Britain on a footballer.
Yeah.
Right. And that was the key thing, and it was dragging on and dragging on. So I wanted to make sure that I was watching it. Oh, come on, sign the fucker. But the whole experience was fantastic. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I definitely enjoyed it more than some games I've been to.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
And that's a new phenomenon to me. Right.
That's testament to Sky Sports coverage as well.
They are very good.
Fantastic. It's so slick, and it makes that sort of thing exciting. I mean, I remember staying up like till the end of the transfer window, like
midnight, right? Years, 11 o'clock, wasn't it? Yeah.
Years ago when I was in my flat, when I think Berbatov was being sold to Man United, and I think Man City were being bought out as well. It was the same sort of
right, that was the a same big year, yeah.
Yeah, it was the same weekend, and then they tried to hijack the deal and all this stuff. It was terribly exciting, really tense, and there's a real storyline going through that. And with the window, you get, there's certain managers and certain teams and certain ways that they do business where they might get in the market early and, buy what they need and then get out. So they, try and get under the radar. And there might be some that put pressure on teams where they leave it to the last minute and say, oh, we'll give you 30 million for this player. It might be rated like 40 million, but like you can get it now. But that he doesn't want to play for you now. And like in a year when he's free, we'll just have him anyway.
Yeah.
So like
we've got some kind of unwritten agreement principle.
Yeah, and it forces teams to pull their pants down. And if you do business that late in the window, like you look at the Everton where they sold Fellaini to Man United
at the last minute,
but now they haven't got a replacement.
No.
They might have a replacement, but that's the sort of thing where
certainly not the same calibre.
No, and I think that's where like Spurs. I'm a Spurs fan, and that's where they did well with the Gareth Bale thing. They knew it was going to go through eventually. It was always going to happen. So they spent all their money beforehand.
Yeah, well, not
all
Spurs are good, but Spurs were good. I must say, I mean, as an anti-Spurs man, in a lot of ways. they did a fantastic business. You've basically built a whole new team out of one player, selling one player,
sold a player, bought a team.
Bang on. Yeah. Obviously he is a fantastic player, but no one player is bigger than any club, right?
No, exactly.
And you'll do well this year. I mean, the first game you've lost so far is the Arsenal game, right?
Yeah. And we played an entirely new team.
Yeah.
So
they're going to need to bed in. They will. Yeah. It might take a couple of months, but then it's going to be a formidable club, up there with the best of them. Coming back to transfer deadline day, I think it's always helpful when you, like I said, you have a vested interest. So, for example, I was very much interested in what my club was doing. And traditionally, over the last few years, Arsenal have been very quiet on transfer deadline day,
i.e.
non-existent. So for them to actually do something, it made it really more exciting for me.
Was it enough?
One player.
Like a marquee player. Was it enough?
I think it was a sign. No, we needed a striker as well. It wasn't enough in the sense that we needed a striker, which is why we tried for Demba Ba. But was it enough? It was in a sense of the management going this as a statement of intent.
Yeah.
To go, look, we've always been criticised, and I'm one of the most vocal ones for criticising Wenger and the management team.
I'd say your dad's a bit more vocal than you.
Well, yeah.
In volume, if you're not anything else.
The Arsenal a bit too much. refusing to spend money for God knows how long, and you know that many fans, including myself, believe that's why they've actually gone backwards and haven't won anything for going on 9 years now.
Yep.
To actually go out there and spend 40 plus million on one player
who's going to get injured on international duty this
he
week.
May well get injured this week. That's Sod's law, right? Yeah, yeah. But and then of course everyone laughs at us, but if he doesn't and he suddenly plays, you know, 30 games a season and is a revelation, then it will suddenly become the signing of the season, right?
So, one man team.
Well, yeah. Well, you like you last year with Gareth Bale, yeah.
Oh, really?
No man team now, yeah. it was enough as a statement of intent to the fans more than anything else.
Yeah,
the
yeah,
Arsenal
yeah.
fans to go, look, we can spend big and we can get the right players if yeah. we, you know, the big players if we really try, and they did that, and so they've kind of, I think, alleviated some of the pressure on themselves, the management. For a little while at least.
Yeah, I think the moment that he gets injured, and you know, when Wenger goes, oh, he's only out for 2 weeks and he ends up being out for 12, as always happens, you should have invested in a new medical team.
Arsenal's medical are ridiculous. Like, they always say, oh, it's a little niggle, and then the player is out for a season.
Yeah, he's
I
dead.
Mean, look at Jack Wilshere and Van Persie, famously. Yeah. He went 7 seasons, pretty much injured half the time, and we finally got a brilliant season out of him. And to be honest, for me, that was enough to warrant the 7 years of pain. And then obviously, he moves on to Man U and has been a revelation there as well.
Yeah.
But you know, the first thing we were saying when he sold to Van Persie to Man U, oh, he'll get injured next week, and of course he didn't, and he's been amazing. So I'm hoping the same thing will happen with Ozil for us for a change.
I doubt it. I think there's a real question mark over your medical squad. But you know, that's the thing. You had this big marquee signing, which is a statement of intent. But the moment he gets injured and you're back to your shitters as you are. It will be.
Look what shit is. I think we've got a very strong squad this year. We just haven't got depth in squad. Yeah. Our first 11's excellent, but then we haven't got a 12th.
But this is entirely my point. There'll be, you know, because there's no depth in strength, or strength in depth rather, it will be, oh, well, you know, it's all well and good us having spent all that money on that player, but he's not playing. So what you should have done is this. And that's absolutely going to happen.
What I would say is that in the past. You know, previous 6, 7, 8 years where Wenger hasn't bought a big player and he's just relied on unknown French people coming in who, quite frankly, most of them were crap.
Delivery drivers.
99% of them are shit, you know.
Yeah.
We've always still ended up in the top four somehow. And
I think it's down to him more than anything.
I don't know. I'm not. I'm a bit torn with Wenger. I don't really like him anymore. I think he's lost. He's lost his kind of magic. But I just think, you know, it must be a bonus that we've actually bought a world class player on paper. I think most people would agree to world class player.
No, it's great.
This guy. And that must be a step forward for us, whereas usually we don't do that and we just rely on what we've got. And like I said, there have been so many frustrating years where we just sit there and watch transfer window go by and nothing happens.
Yeah, I think the proof of the pudding will be that I don't think that Arsenal are going to spend a lot more money going forward. They're not going to be splashing the cash like, you know, like your Man United.
No, they haven't got that power.
Or something like for the next few seasons. And the moment that Wenger goes, if you've got a similar squad to what you've got now, you'll just see it crumble. You won't be in the top four. You'll be not mid table, but you'll be, like, you know, outside the top four completely, because I think a lot of Arsenal strength relies on the manager and his tactics and the way that he deals with this stuff. He's, you know,
what's your opinion of Arsene Wenger? Do you rate him as a manager?
Yeah, absolutely.
You think he brings the team up higher than what they would be without him, basically?
100%.
You really do?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I really do. I mean, I don't particularly like him at all because he's an Arsenal man.
No, but taking out the obvious biases because of
Arsenal's biases. I mean, I think I've just given my objective opinion there. That I think he binds the team together and he gets more than the sum of their parts. Which, you know, which is why you have got a fairly, I don't, it's not mediocre, but it's not as good a squad as some of the others in the top six. But you frequently
squad definitely not. But I think individually, our first 11 team is as good as anyone else's. But I think it's where we let down is
totally,
the squad.
I totally disagree.
I think the lack of squad is the problem.
I totally disagree with your first 11 thing. I don't think you have got that. But I think
we can meet anyone on our day.
I think Wenger is like your 12th man sort of thing. His tactics and the way that he's bound.
It's definitely not the Emirates. It's so fucking quiet there. the problem for me is squad depth, like you said at the beginning. Their last game against Spurs, the bench. You had £65 million worth of players on the bench. Oh, we had our bench. I didn't recognise three names on it.
Yeah,
they were youth players that they dragged up because there's so many injuries and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
The Artetas of the world out and stuff. And it's just like that's where we will fail.
Yeah,
because we literally, you know, when you get into cold winter and people do pick up niggles and they've been playing constantly week in week out for 30 weeks, you are going to get injuries. We've already got those injuries. Even when they're coming back and stuff, if we get a couple more, we'd have no cover. We've got kids going in from the youth team, and that's not good enough for a top four team.
No. But I mean, there are benefits to not messing around with your squad and your team. Mm. I mean, I completely agree with you. You need more strength from Arsenal in depth. But with Spurs, as you said, there was £60-70 million worth of talent there, but they're all new players. Mm. They don't know how to play with each other. So when you get all that talent in there, and you feel that you have to use them and stuff, Spurs are going to lose the next couple of games, maybe. And they'll get turned over.
How long do you think it will take Spurs to bed in and be playing as a team all on the same page?
A few games.
I think it'll be a minimum 6 months.
No way.
There's this famous thing about a player when they're coming to the Premier League from an outside country. It takes them a good year or so to get up and running and get used to the speed and style of playing the Premier League, right?
Individual
players. I think people look at Man City in the past. They've built these teams out of nothing with loads of money, and it's taken them a year or two. I have no doubt that the Spurs team will come to fruition and be excellent. Mm. I don't think it'll be this season.
It won't be 6 months. It absolutely won't be 6 months because we've got enough players who actually already have played together.
Embedded, okay.
It's adding strength in depth. That's all they've done.
Yeah, well, and they've
get rid of some of the good players and introduce really good players. Mm. And they've changed the style of the team as well. And I don't want this to be like the Arsenal Spurs podcast.
No.
But they've changed the size and shape of the team as well. So a lot of our players now are. Especially the newer ones are very big, are very powerful, very skillful as well. So there's a physical dynamic to the squad. Whereas before it was very there was a lot of pace and a lot of a lot of trickery and like you in the wingers and you had the clever midfield and stuff like that. But now you've got the cleverness and the physicality, which I think I'm not an expert, but I think you've got to have one or the other. It's difficult to get a panacea to it.
Moving away from the Arsenal Spurs thing, what about the other teams? Obviously, there's been a lot of talk about Man United and their lack of sealing the deal at the end of the transfer window. Mm. There's this whole saga right at the end. Well, are they going to sign this Herrera player from Atletico Madrid, I think it was, or not? And they didn't get him in the end, and that was a bit of a body blow. They managed to get Fellaini literally last gasp. But missed out on Leighton Baines and players like that, and there's now question marks over Moyes. I mean, do you think they're going to be up the top there? Are they going to be fighting for the championship? Aren't they?
They walked it last year. So did they really need to sign too many players?
No, arguably not. But again, if you're looking at quality of manager and saying in a sense that Wenger is the 13th man or 12th man, sorry, then Ferguson must have been the 12th and 13th man, right?
Yeah.
And had been for decades.
Yeah. Which is probably why it's important not to rock the boat too much, because those players, if he'd brought in if Moyes had brought in loads of players that he didn't, that no one knew how to play with, then they would have just fallen over like Spurs are going to do for the next few games. But if he's kept it fairly consistent and just added a bit of
if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Exactly. There's no reason that he should try and fuck around with it, because these players now play. It kind of runs itself for the first year, and he can he could win the league or come second or whatnot, and it'd still be a triumph. It'd still be a success. But that's what he needs to do. He just needs to keep consistency, and then next year when they all know him and know the way that he likes to play, then he can start introducing like mediocre players and make him mid-table.
I mean, there's no other team that for me is so outstanding that they're going to walk it over Man U or any other. I think it's the most open field I can remember in a long time, because Mourinho, he's lost a bit of the sheen, and he's not so special to me no more. the special one.
Falling out of love with him.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just he took a bit of a battering whilst in Spain, and
I think it's too early to tell.
Yeah, it is. Well, it's way too early. And what's happened is there's been some massive games very early on in this, like the Arsenal Spurs derby and Manchester Liverpool last week. Massive games. Man United losing to Liverpool. That wouldn't happen 3 months into the league. I just don't believe it would. They give them a much more big. It was a terrible game.
Oh,
much
awful.
Better fight. It's like there's too much of the good stuff too early. Mm. Teams are still warming up a little bit. You know what I mean?
Well, everyone's got to play each other twice, so.
Coming onto the money side of the transfer window, I mean, that's obviously a ridiculous sum and it's going up and up each year. Too much money in the football? Is it ruining the game?
I don't think it's ruining it. I just think it's the natural progression. Everything gets more expensive.
Mm. But, like, you know, 86 million for a player or whatever it is. That's...
Someone's only anything's only worth what someone's willing to pay for it.
Mm.
And, you know, the problem with the big Spanish clubs is that they... you got the president guy there, especially like Real Madrid's of the world, where the president has to make a statement. I am going to sign, you know, Gareth Bale, or I'm going to sign whoever is the best player in the world.
So,
and if you elect me, that's what happened. Then I get elected, then they have to do it.
Yeah, the thing, right? They have to make a statement, like it's almost like a presidential election.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is.
And they change each year, don't they? And so they make a statement of intent, like, yeah, if you elect me to be your president this year, I will sign Gareth Bale, right?
Yeah.
And then they have to go and do that thing, and they have to presumably. Just make it happen and spend whatever they have to spend to make it happen.
But they've got the money to do it.
Mm.
They've got the fan base. They do it. Yeah, I mean it's interesting, but it's good that you've got like the Spanish clubs, like the Real Madrid and Barcelona's, where the players actually want to play for. But then you've got like these Russian clubs and the like Saudi clubs that have got infinitely more money.
Yeah,
unlimited funds where you know they can pay players, I don't know, £500,000. A week, like easy.
There's a Chinese team, isn't there, that had Anelka and you know, no one's ever going to want to play in that league. It's a non-existent.
Especially Nicolas Anelka.
But effectively, the money talks, right? They've gone for the cash.
Exactly. I mean, for a player like, let's take Nicolas Anelka for an example, a player like him at his stage in his career. And he gets to join a team with Raul and Kaká and, you know, a few aging ones. And you might have, like, I know he's not in there, but like a Beckham or...
Figo or something.
Yeah, Luis Figo or you know, these big-name players. And you go, I played in a team with these guys. Mm. Much like the Galaxy in the 70s, where, you know, you had Pelé and
Lacatus. It's like Harlem Globetrotters of the football.
Exactly,
world, yeah.
That's exactly it. And, you know, it's to build, I think in many instances, especially with like the Saudi places, it could be like, it's almost like a tourism thing. I'm sure that there's elements of just like, you know, get this team so that people come in to see this happen, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's fine. That's a thing.
Well, that was the whole thing with Beckham. I mean, no matter what he says about bringing football to the masses of America and all this kind of worthiness, ultimately he went to America for the cash, right? They were offering him at the time $250 million, 5-year deal. What a ridiculous amount of money.
Yeah.
Anyone would take that.
And he's going to win
any job.
Yeah.
I mean, effectively, imagine it's your job, you're just doing your day job, and someone's offering you this ridiculous amount of money. How are you going to turn down that? You'd go and do the job even if you thought, I don't really like doing that work, it's a piece of piss compared to Premier League, you know, effectively the MLS American League is a piece of piss compared to the Premiership.
Yeah.
But
Sunday League.
Yeah, so imagine you being offered this job which you know you can do with your hands tied behind your back and it's a bit boring or whatever, but they're offering you a stupid amount of money for it. It'd be bloody hard to turn down that money if it's like, you know, triple your wages now or something.
Well, it's a good point actually, how this sort of job market, because that's what it is. It's just a job market. It's just a job.
Yeah.
Like why doesn't the like normal job market work like this?
Yeah.
Why can't I get transferred to a company? Like if I'm performing well in my job.
Yeah.
Like, and it does happen because, you know, it's headhunting essentially.
Yeah, but how many people get headhunted in our generic jobs? You know what I mean?
It's only something that happens in a couple of sectors.
Mm.
But imagine if it didn't. Like if you had your, you got your job,
yeah,
and you got you have an agent, because agents are a big deal as well,
yeah, of course.
But you've got your agent, which is just a guy who basically constantly monitors your performance, or a girl, not sexist, or sexy indeed, and that person basically just says goes to another company and just says, oh, by the way, Porter's doing well today.
He's smashing it this week.
He filed it like I've never seen him file a
piece of paper before.
Email was sent so quickly.
Yeah, you want to see him with a stapler gun. Bang! 16 sheets of A4.
Like, that would. Like,
that fucking lightning. Yeah. He's done it.
Do you want to double his wages and give him less work?
He's willing to make a move, but I can't talk about it right now.
Let's talk about it in August.
Yeah.
But you've got to sign him before 11 o'clock at night on the 31st. Is that all right?
Exactly. It's one of those
jobs much more interesting.
It would make it brilliant, wouldn't it? And do you know what? If it did work like that, if there was like this sort of universal like performance measure, I think, because I know everyone's got like performance measuring in their jobs, to a certain degree. In mine, it's a bit lax. Then I think people would react a lot, but they'd be a lot better at their jobs because they'd know.
Yeah, people would be a hell of a lot more productive, right?
Yeah, exactly, because you know that no matter what you do, you're always gonna someone's always looking, and you're always gonna get better offer. It's an interesting way of it working. I mean, I'd love to be able to do that. You know, or if it gets to the end of. If your work's fucking you off sort of thing, you go, we're not going to do this. You go, well, do you know what? Next year I can just leave on a free.
Yeah.
I'll do a Bosman for you.
Sort me out or not. I'm off. Yeah.
I'll leave on a Bosman and, you'll have to find a replacement. But no notice period sort of thing. Bye.
Bye, I'm off.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you got to. No, I'm off. Bye.
Yeah. Yeah. Like your rival has poached me sort of thing and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
that would be awesome. I'd love to work.
There are elements. Obviously, that's something you can do now anyway. Like, there's nothing stopping people from doing that in the workplace. It's an incredibly common practice. But to do it, to have someone proactively doing that, someone to come in and, like, pick you up and drop you somewhere else, would be a massive fuck.
That'd be amazing.
And, people definitely, I think, work differently. The role of management in a company would be a lot more tighter, much as we said about Arsene Wenger, putting together a team greater than the sum of its parts. People in that position, you can do things like that, would be, be alchemists. They'd be welcome with open arms in certain companies.
And they would be headhunted, no doubt.
Exactly. And then they'd go, there'd be a constant like stream of turnover of people. Can you imagine if there was a transfer deadline day with jobs?
That'd be amazing.
Like you can't change job for like 9 months of the year.
That would be absolutely stunning.
And there's only how long is the transfer window? 2 months?
January it opens again, doesn't it? So
the summer one.
Oh no, it's all summer, isn't it? Yeah, I don't know, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I suppose it is.
I suspect it. I would guess it ends at the. It starts at the beginning at the end of the previous season.
Mm.
Because obviously it doesn't matter from then. Once the last game's played, you can sign whoever you like. It's not going to affect anything until start date of the next season.
So maybe it's the summer holidays, the school summer holidays. Let's just say that. So school summer holidays, you've got like 6 weeks where people can change jobs. Mm. And then there's a little run around Christmas for like 2 weeks.
People are really unhappy in their jobs.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to bully them or anything. Yeah. There's a lot of argument with regards to all this money being spent in football now that basically it's getting to a point where it's pricing the average person out of the game, right? This is the argument. For example,
the fan,
the average grassroots fan, Smokey Joe earns 15 grand a year, struggles by, but he wants to go see his favourite team. A season ticket now is what, pushing grand and a half or something for the big teams?
I think it varies wildly.
It really does. But I mean, Premier League teams, you're looking at around a grand minimum, I would have thought. Which is a hell of a lot of money. And then when you're there, I mean, match day, they do these studies, and the figures are over £100 now is an average match day out. Well, that includes just, buying a burger or something, buying a pint, your ticket, and your travel.
Yeah.
They do this kind of shopping basket of all the basic things you would probably do.
Program.
And it's now, the average is over £100 in a Premiership game, certainly.
Yeah.
Now, that's a hell of a lot of money. I can do it, I have the luxury of doing it maybe once, twice, three times a year, a season, realistically, because, it's life you've got to pay for, right?
Totally.
And that's a privileged position, I think, compared to a lot of people who probably just simply can't afford that. And their only time they get to see their club in action is on the TV.
Yeah.
And even then, they probably have to go down the pub because they can't afford the cost of Sky Sports.
Yeah. Well, our local doesn't even show the Sky Sports.
That's a whole other podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the interesting point is we're lucky enough to live, local to our football teams. I mean, Spurs is your local team, but you eschew it.
My family come from the best place on earth, which is Islington originally.
Well, you know, but
Highbury Town. Yeah,
I'm fully of the opinion that you pick your football team by finding where you live and putting a pin.
Oh,
in
no,
the
it's a family historical thing. No, I don't know. Absolutely, yeah.
That's the argument. So if you're all your that's family, the argument that London-based Man U fans give. Yours is fine because it's more or less equidistant. It's fine. But it's we're lucky enough to be very close to the teams that we support. So for us, the travel thing isn't too much of an issue, and it doesn't take a great deal out of our day. Like for us to go watch a 90-minute football match, it'll more or less take 2 hours out of our day.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Because it take 15 minutes to get there, 15 minutes to get back, and you got a break. Sort of
absolutely, yeah. We can be home, you know, an hour after the game's over.
I've been home from Spurs matches, and they're still showing the game on the TV. Like just like the after game analysis, post match analysis. Yeah, I've been back in time for that.
Well, I think you can do two buses in you there, aren't you?
I could. Yeah, I mean, I could walk it. I used to walk with my mum and dad's house. I used to walk to Wire Lane.
Oh yeah, I mean, it really is the local team in that sense. So what was the point?
For us, it's not too bad to get to a game because, you know, it doesn't take too much time out of your day, and the travel element of it is a lot less. So for, you know, if you don't have a pie and you don't buy a program and you just have you buy your ticket and you have a beer, it's what? I mean, you're talking 30, 40 quid. But I'd say the average fan, in inverted commas, who has to do more of a travel. Like if you support, let's say for instance you support Aston Villa, but for some reason you live in London.
Because work's brought you here.
Because work's, or for whatever reason.
You just wouldn't do it though, would you? Unless you're in a very privileged position where you could afford to literally spend £100 getting there.
Yeah. That's kind of my point, that, you know,
the hotel overnight and all this nonsense.
Well, I don't think you'd do that. I mean,
It depends if you have won a brass or not, but
football, let's make football the football day extra special.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone scores.
That was weird. My entire house just vibrated. That's the Indian.
That was someone scoring, right?
Yeah, that was the Indian burial ground. I must get that thing.
The Indian burial ground.
It's interesting. I mean, we know someone who supports Everton, who lives in London.
Yes.
Who travels up and back, and I can't believe that. I mean, a friend of mine, Lucy, she was Man U season ticket holder, lived in London, commuted to Manchester to watch Man U. Like, that's, you know, that's commitment, man.
Well, people go nuts for their teams, don't they? Exactly. That's proper dedication. I mean, that's borders on insane to me. You'd do that. But
the definition of fan being fanatic.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And for a lot of people, though, that's kind of the camaraderie part of it as well, like the actual journey going to there. And a couple of times, like many, 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 many years ago, talking like 15, 20 years ago, if I'd go to White Hart Lane with like my brothers or something like that, we'd get like a coach thing from outside the Royston, and it would like pick everyone up and take you to...
It's only a 20-minute drive.
Oh yeah, it's fucking nothing. As I say, you can walk it.
It's not
that far at all.
But it's the whole getting into the atmosphere.
Everyone going together, and then like
that's what football's all about.
The slow cry.
Well,
my
thing is that it's so expensive now to just do the basics, let alone adding all that on top as well. It's got to be pricing people out of going to football matches.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to go with my dad as a kid, you know, it would have cost him a lot less. He would have been able to, you know, when my boy's old enough to take him to football, it's going to be a real, it's going to have to be a real special thing because the cost of two of us going, I'm just not going to be able to afford that on a regular basis. Do you know what I mean?
It's all right, you'll be in the Championship by then.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks very much. Champions League,
it's a fair point. And I think a lot of clubs are trying to do good things with like concessions. I know West Ham do really good concessions for like kids and people. Yeah. If you book at a certain time or book a certain number of games, you get a fairly hefty discount. Now, you know, teams like West Ham might struggle potentially to fill their ground. I'm saying that off the top of my head. I'm sure they're fine. Whereas someone like like a Fulham, for instance, you see a Fulham match, there's not a lot of people there. Maybe. I mean, I know Craven Cottage doesn't hold as many, but I think it's one of the smaller capacity grounds. But I don't think it's not all the time full. I know that White Hart Lane, regardless of the game, is always absolutely banged to the rafters. You can't get a ticket for love nor money.
Yeah.
And it's, again, I mean, I think Spurs' ground is too small for their fan base, which is why they're building a larger capacity ground.
And what we've seen more recently in football is that people will, there's a lot more corporate people there nowadays than there would have been when we were kids, and people, you know, literally travel. It's become like more of a tourist thing, like you were saying. So people will travel to, you know, in the case of Spurs, for example, travel to London and they'll go to see a Spurs game from another country, you know. And so when I sit in an Arsenal crowd, when I'm lucky enough to get there, my God, is it a diverse bunch of people.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there are a million different languages being spoken and you feel...
That's no excuse for no one singing, Tom.
Yeah. Oh, what's this song? Yeah. You really feel like, you know, I remember as a kid, everyone was pretty much just saying,
woo! Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And now it's so much more family friendly. And I suspect a lot of people come there as tourists and, you know, I'm an Arsenal fan, but I live in Dubai kind of thing. But, you know, they're on holiday in London or something and they're able to get a ticket to the game. It's a bit like that now, and that's a lot more. All those little bits and bobs make it such a different crowd.
Yeah, it's a melting pot.
Yeah,
it's
in a good way. It's a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not disagreeing. But we going back to the thing you said about the corporate side of it. It's a big money business now, so you know they have to have more corporate seats to
biggest sport in the world, right?
Yeah, to bring people like you know for your corporate sponsors and for that sort of thing. So I think that's horses for courses, really.
I worry that they're getting to a saturation point personally where it's so expensive to go see your team play a football match just to get there and do the basic things. Actually, there's people missing out. That, you know, whereas, I mean, maybe this is life and just things get more expensive, but it's become such a luxury that for many people, including myself, it's almost impossible to go to unless you're lucky enough to get someone's sort of friend or offered a free ticket or something because they've got a season ticket and they couldn't go. Or, you know, it's getting to that point for me.
Well, for every person who can't go one week because they've got the money, there's someone who can go because they have. And then that time,
there's always someone who's got the cash.
There's never, you know, for the popular teams, there's always, you know, they're not going to have an empty seat just because they've run out of fans. That's the beauty of having a sport so popular in this country that, you know, there's always going to be enough people to fill a seat unless the team is shit or unpopular, in which case you've got a larger problem.
I suppose we're talking about the biggest teams in the country and some of the biggest teams in the world so far, but obviously there are plenty of hundreds of clubs on the lower levels which might be a lot cheaper to go and see. You know, in our area, for example, Barnet's not that far, Barnet FC, Leighton Orient, of course.
Yeah.
They famously did £10 tickets for kids not that long ago.
Yeah. I went to some of those games.
Did you? Yeah, there you go. And you know, maybe that would be the way for me to take my boy when he's old enough to go see a football match if he wants to.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll be more a Leighton Orient game rather than an Arsenal game, for example.
Yeah, why not?
Just because it's a bus journey away, you still get the feel of going to a match. It might not be the quality of football you see on the telly, but you still get to experience that whole kind of, oh, let's have a burger in the cold and keep warm with our scarves and enjoy a football match, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's nice that we've got Leighton Orient so close because, you know, they're not a shit team.
They have a huge history.
Yeah.
For us, we're lucky enough. It is literally a bus journey away.
Two buses for me. I have to change, but it's still one road.
You can walk it.
I can, but very slowly. Yeah. It's nice that I mean, living in London, you've got like a dearth of decent football teams in there. And it's interesting. I mean, when I was at school, there was, you know, everybody. You know, it wasn't just, oh, you either supported Spurs, you supported Arsenal. You know, it's West Ham fans, it's Chelsea fans. Yeah. Never met a Fulham fan in my life, but that's a different matter entirely. You know, there was like, you know, QPR fans and Millwall fans and stuff like that. You know, from our group of friends. You know,
absolutely.
We're not just Spurs and Arsenal. We've got Liverpool fans in there. West Ham.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. There's United.
Man United. A couple of Chelsea fans.
Yeah, you mentioned Everton.
Everton.
God, it's difficult, but yeah,
I'm sure. Newcastle.
Yeah, Newcastle. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
So yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, as you say, that before I flippantly interrupted you, you know, there is that family element to it as well. You know, people do support their family team.
Mm.
Which is nice. It's a nice thing. It's almost handed down.
It's a hand-me-down, exactly. Yeah. You get it from your parents and they get it from their parents and all that. And that's how it worked for me personally. Yeah. My family obviously come from the area. They've just moved out and they were very much of the area. They lived, I mean, and I know plenty of people who are Man United fans who have never been to Old Trafford.
Yeah.
And they're the worst kind of supporters in a sense where they had no history. I'd much rather be someone whose family was very much, it was the local team in my sense, and they've just moved away. But they've taken that history of the families with them, and they've passed it on to us. Yeah. And you still feel very much at home with, you know, I still feel very much at home in that area.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally. Yeah.
So yeah. Okay.
What's your allegiance with other sports? We've talked about football here, but what other sports do you follow? I mean, you've spoken about cricket before.
Cricket, yeah, I like cricket a lot, actually. Used to follow it a lot more in my teenage years and early 20s. I love cricket. I love going to see it. I don't particularly follow it. My dad's a Surrey cricket fan. At a county cricket level, has a season ticket with them. So when I do get to go, I'll obviously, just to go with someone, I'll go with him more than anything else, more than likely, and we'll go and see Surrey play. But that, I mean, that, the natural team I would have thought for us in a county cricket level locally would be Essex.
Yeah.
They're the nearest one, right? Any
other sports?
I'm just trying to think, really.
Like rugby, are you interested in that?
We have a rugby player in the family. My cousin is a rugby wag.
Okay.
He plays for Scotland. I won't go into names. He plays for Scotland rugby.
Right, okay.
Union. I don't know much about rugby, Union or the other one.
No.
But he's one of
League.
Them. Yeah, I think it's Union.
He plays
for Scotland.
So how's he a wag?
She's a wag. She's his wag. My cousin's the wag.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm really confused there.
Yeah. So because of that, I mean, I know a little bit more. Clearly not, but on this podcast.
Yeah.
But, about rugby, I've shown a little bit more interest in it because of that.
Golf. Any, do you follow any players on golf?
I like snooker.
I love snooker, yeah.
I don't tend to watch it much at the moment.
Snooker's one of my favourite things to watch on television. Snooker and golf, actually. And I'm going to say, I've never held a golf club in my life, a golf bat.
Golf bat.
It's one of, it's,
I love those golf bats.
Yeah, hey, they're really nice and thin.
Tennis.
I don't really care about tennis.
I like tennis.
I watch it with Wimbledon because I get caught up in it a little bit.
It's the US Open at the minute. It has been recently.
It's just a bit overlong and a bit samey for me. But I appreciate it. I'll watch a game occasionally.
Wimbledon's excellent. I do really enjoy it. Yeah. Having been to Wimbledon recently, and I say recently, last 3 years, 4 years or so, and it was stunning down there. And I thoroughly recommend going to Wimbledon if ever anyone gets a chance.
Yeah.
It really is. It feels special.
Mm.
It's not like it's going to watch football match.
Yeah.
It's another level on top of that. It's special, the whole kind of strawberries and cream cost, by the way, something like £10 down there. So take your own if you can. It's just a little tip.
Consumer advice from
just
the conversation.
Just a little tip there.
Yeah.
But yeah, that feels really special. I really enjoyed that.
Motor racing? Do you like motor racing?
Never been to, no, I don't get motor racing at all. It's just cars going around in circles to me. It really is. And I know you're a big fan, and I can understand the appeal of it. I really can. But for me, it's just cars going around in circles.
Yeah. I mean, I follow a lot of the, I support the British teams in Formula One. The likes of McLaren, Lotus as well. And it's arguable that you could say, like, either none of them are British or they're all British, because you know, I think 90% of the teams are based in like Surrey, and they're all pretty much like full of Brits anyway, because we're the best at engineers and whatnot.
Yeah, which is a testament to our fantastic way with cars, basically.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, I support McLaren and Lotus as well. As well as the
is British. James Hunt still racing? Jackie Stewart?
I'm not sure they are. Sir Jackie, thank you. But he's always on the box. He's always doing something. It's Jackie Stewart with his little hat. But yeah, I support the likes of Jenson Button and to a lesser degree Lewis Hamilton. Paul de Resta as well, big fan of his.
I think he's
going to do good things in the future.
Yeah, he's a young lad, isn't he?
Yeah, hopefully he'll get. I'm hoping he gets a move to Ferrari at some point. Just so we can really see, he can really put his chops down and, you know, show us what
he needs a good car.
Shows what he's made of. Yeah, yeah. I mean, the Force India's okay. It's a good test bed, really. And I think he's doing well in that. And hopefully that'll get him a good drive. He's very popular as well, Paul de Resta, by all accounts. Yeah, there's lots of sports. I mean, I'd like to pay a bit more attention to stuff like ice hockey as well.
I'd like to give that a go. What do you think of American football?
I run hot and cold with it. Sometimes I like it. There was a period of time where I sort of got into it a little bit. I was thinking, it's actually okay.
See, I can't watch it on the telly, right? No. It's too long and it's dragged out. But when you're there, I remember the London Monarchs.
I used to go to Wembley.
Well, same as me, right? And they eventually ended up at White Hart Lane.
Yes, true.
And I went to see them several times over the years, and it's a fantastic night out. You know, this is why I like cricket a little bit. Speaking about value for money, coming back to the whole money thing, football match is over in 90 minutes, and you're out the door. Mm. And you can't buy a beer and take it down into the stands anymore, and all this kind of nonsense, right? Yeah. But at cricket, for example, you know, if you get a test match, you're there all day, 10 in the morning till 6, 7 at night.
Yeah.
You can drink a beer, you can take some food in with you, and the tickets are usually less expensive than a football match ticket, right? I think it was like 15, 20 quid, 20 games are great. I really enjoyed that. And they're still 3 hours long. They're like an American football match, it's about 3 hours long. You can go there at 6 o'clock after work at night, and you'll be home by 10 o'clock at night still, but you can have a beer, and it's so much better value for money for me, because you're getting a proper night out. And American football's like that. Baseball, I've never been a fan of baseball.
Don't get it.
But what I would say is that we had a stopover in Los Angeles a couple of years ago, and going on the way to Hawaii, and we spent the night in a hotel, and literally we're waiting for the flight the next morning, so we can't do anything.
Yeah, yeah.
So we went to the bar in the hotel. We ordered a big pizza at the bar, and we sat there and we watched a baseball game. Didn't know what was doing, but after an hour, you work out what's going on, basically. You work out the rules. And it went on for 3 hours. And we drank, and we ate this massive pizza that was way too big. And we watched this baseball game and thoroughly enjoyed it. And again, a bit like a 2020 cricket match, it always tends to somehow end up on the last couple of overs, and it's really exciting at the end. And it's a lot closer than it should be. The same with a baseball match. I actually thoroughly enjoyed it, but I think you need to be engaged in it like we was there. We had nothing else to do, and we had the pizza, and we was enjoying the American experience, so to speak. And I suspect if you're at the game itself, it would be awesome. But yeah, I generally wouldn't watch that or American football on telly. It's too long-winded.
Basketball,
I imagine
it's really really kinetic when you're there. If you get like courtside at like at the Lakers or something like that, where the people doing it properly rather than just like lanky teenagers from a council estate bouncing around Lee Valley ice rink, that sort of thing.
Pass me the ball.
I'm gonna put it for my legs in it.
Give me the knife. I'm gonna shank it.
Slam dunk. It's just I don't know. It's something about I'd love to go to a proper like NBA game and see how people do it properly.
Well, like any top sport, at its peak, it's an art form, right?
Presumably
basketball. You know, like you say, the Lakers versus Chicago Bulls or something, championship playoffs or whatever the fuck it is. You know, in the World Series in America only.
You do it's know what's called that, don't you?
What's that?
Why it's called the World Series.
Go on.
It's like World Tobacco was the sponsor.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Point. That's why it's called the World Series. Okay.
Learn something new every day. Yeah. I'm sure that will be absolutely stunning to watch.
And hopefully at one point I'll get a chance to do that.
Just like Leighton Orient.
Yeah, exactly like Leighton. Like Leighton Orient versus Club Foot.
Club Foot.
I think that's a nice place to leave it.
Yeah, that's. Should we move on?
I think that's it.
Oh, is that it? Oh, blimey.
I think we'll do that.
Oh, well, we'll move on to the next podcast next week.
We've been talking about this for a while, so it's nice. It's a nice place to end that.
Go sports
team. Put the goal in the ball.
This is our expert analysis on all things sport.
Yeah, but I think we've covered the transfer window and stuff. I'm looking forward to getting poached at work, going on a Bosman.
He's done a Bosman. Fucking hell.
I'm looking forward to going into work next tomorrow and getting injured and being out for 12 weeks.
Brilliant. Like Ozil, Hopefully not. Fingers crossed. Touch wood. Don't do it at the same time.
DJ Otzi or whatever his name is.
DJ Otzi, yeah. Hey, Guna. Yeah. it's been a pleasure.
It has. It's been emotional. Thank you for listening to episode 330 of The Conversation.
You're still here? Fucking hell.
Go conversate.
Created a new word there.
I know. I'm going to use it all the time.
I'm going to conversate and then masturbate.
We got all the way to the end and he had to
drags it into the gutter.
No, no, have a mass debate. No, that's not rude.
Oh, I'm going to cut that bit out. So,
I bet you don't.
Yeah, I bet I don't either. Okay, so thanks very much for listening to episode 30 of The Conversation. Please stick around. Please recommend this to your friends if you've enjoyed it.
What do we talk about next week? Have we got any ideas?
I don't know.
Should we not spoil it?
I don't know.
We can't spoil it because we don't know.
We haven't got any ideas. Yeah. By all means, suggest some ideas you'd like us to talk about or anything you'd like us to cover. We are always open to suggestions. Please do recommend us to your friends. And if you can, please do write us a very short review on iTunes. Just rate it. That's fine, because that will help us all get out there in the big wide world and we can all conversate together. See what I did there?
Conversate, not the other word. All right, yes.
So, again, thank you for listening to episode 30 of The Conversation. My name's been Alan Porter.
I'm Tom Hutchinson. We'll see you next time.
See you then. Bye.